You are listening to Sid Weighs In. We're a Tuck School business professor, associate dean for executive education, and an expert on strategy and leadership. Sidney Finkelstein shares his views on what leaders are doing, why they are doing it, and whether it makes sense for them and for you.
This is Sidney Finkelstein. Welcome to another podcast of Sid Weighs In, where I talk about one of my recent BBC columns with a guest host. And today that guest host is Ellen Corey.
Hi, Sid. Thank you for having me on.
It's nice to have you back with us. You were chatting about resilience not that long ago as well. And today we have a little bit different topic, one that I suppose a lot of people can relate to. But first, maybe you should tell everyone a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. I'm a second-year student here at the Tuck School of Business in Hanover. Prior to Tuck, I worked in defense and then in the management consulting industry. And after Tuck, I'm planning to go into general management.
That sounds very impressive, actually. You were also in my two classes.
Yes, some of my favorite classes.
I'm glad you got that in. Okay.
Well, I do want to let you know I'm excited to be on the podcast, but unfortunately I have to run to a meeting soon and I don't want to be late.
Uh-oh. Well, I better get into it. Today's column is about meeting malpractice. How do you like that?
Great. Fits right in.
When I first wrote this column, we were, of course, at a different season. It was summer. And so with summer in full swing, our thoughts naturally turned to barbecues, beaches, and vacations. And I guess right now in the middle of winter, we're all thinking about that again. It's the time of the year when you can easily find yourself daydreaming when you should be paying attention. And then, as if in a nightmare, you realize you're seated around a table, listening to people you don't really want to hear from, people who are saying things you don't really need to know. Yes, you are in a meeting at work and you can't escape. Is this the cruel fate all office dwellers must endure? The answer is, perhaps surprisingly, no. So many people are subject to what I call meeting malpractice that it's a wonder the trial lawyers haven't caught on to this one yet. The good news is that somewhere out there, savvy managers refuse to play along, holding on to the quaint belief that meetings are opportunities for smart people to learn, debate, and discuss, and for accountability to be assigned for actions and results. So what is meeting malpractice and what can we do about it? Meeting malpractice usually starts before the meeting begins. The meeting request comes in with only the barest notion of its purpose: task force meeting, team meeting, and the classic update. But there is no agenda attached to justify this incursion in a busy workday. A meeting without an agenda is like a restaurant dinner without a menu. It's true that a great chef's creations can surprise and delight, but I've yet to see the same skill extend to managers. Clear meeting agendas have multiple benefits. You know what to do in advance to prepare. The meeting convener can rely on the agenda to keep the discussion from drifting into irrelevant territory, and everyone knows when the meeting is done. Clear, concise, and professional. If there are controversies that will be disruptive, concessions that need to be extracted, or favors that need to be called in, the hard work of handling these need to happen before the meeting. In all but brainstorming sessions, there's value in at least some choreography ahead of time. Meeting malpractitioners know none of this. They turn off their political antennas and are forced to rely on either brute force, which ensures minimal buy-in, or pleading, which ensures minimal respect, to reach some semblance of agreement. As important as preparation is to avoid meeting malpractice, the greatest meeting crimes are perpetrated when all participants are assembled. It starts at the beginning. The meeting is called for 9 o'clock, but people drift in for a few minutes afterwards, chatting about what they watched on television the night before. Here's a complicated situation. Wear a watch and use it. Starting a meeting late, or finishing late for that matter, is as good a measure of the lack of managerial discipline as any I've seen. It might take a few tries until people catch on, but they will. And even better, they'll value starting on time because it provides certainty and conveys competence. How you handle the first few minutes of a meeting also can be quite revealing. A manager, let's call her Mary, is an expert in meeting malpractice. After waiting longer than she should to start, she launches into a lengthy discourse on something that is only somewhat related to the meeting topic. She allows herself to be interrupted by the Donald Trump of the team, the person who always believes he knows more than anyone else, and she is somehow unaware of the knowing smiles and arched eyebrows that his co-workers display once Donald starts in on whatever his personal agenda is that day. The reaction is muted, however, since most people around the table are already checking email on their smartphones. Effectively managing a meeting in real time is like being an ice hockey coach. The first tenet, make sure the right people are in the room or on the ice and that the wrong people aren't. Give people short shifts by limiting airtime and ensuring you use your whole bench. Draw on specialized expertise inside and outside of the room during key moments penalty kills. To win, everyone must contribute, not just the loudest person, the most senior person, and the person you're most comfortable with. Among the most egregious offenses of meeting malpractice is letting time be taken up with presentation after presentation, leaving no room for real debate, discussion, and decision-making. How many board meetings are run this way? Almost as if the chief executive officer is trying to run out the clock. If you don't ban PowerPoint slides, at least put a time limit on their use. Even better, why not expect people to review the slides and other information material in advance so that face time can be dedicated to work that cannot be as easily accomplished offline? Finally, the meeting ends. What happens next? Can't think of anything? Exactly. There is no other investment of time an organization regularly makes for which returns are less closely managed. Meetings must end with follow-up assignments or accountabilities, whether that's a call for more analysis or for executing on a decision. And those accountabilities should be delivered on time, not 7:30 p.m. on a Friday. Avoiding meeting malpractice would not solve all of our problems in an era of tremendous globalization and technological disruption, but I sure bet it's a great way to start.
It's interesting hearing your thoughts on meeting malpractice. Just this morning, I was looking at my calendar and noticed that all my meetings are set for 30 or 60 minutes. There's nothing for 45 minutes or 25 minutes. It just seems like 30 and 60 minutes is the default. So are meeting agendas set according to these time blocks, or are the time blocks just set without any understanding of the agenda?
I don't know what it is about people that we love these kind of standard time blocks of 30 minutes, 15, 30, 1 hour, 2 hours. And I suppose I'm guilty of the same thing as I think about it. Maybe it's, Microsoft's fault. You know, Outlook, you got to plug something into Outlook and it's a lot easier to put in 30 minutes or an hour. But logically, we should reverse the process and say, what do we want to accomplish? What is the amount of time we need? Let's cut some of that time back because we know there's some wasted time. And let's go with that. It's an interesting observation.
Well, how often do you see a meeting end early? I always feel like if I'm at a 60-minute meeting, we're 45 minutes in, and even if there is an agenda, if we've covered the agenda, someone will always add things. We never finish the meeting just because the agenda's finished if there's still remaining time.
You know, it's true, and it's a lack of discipline again, and it's the leader of the team and the organizer of the meeting, the creator of the agenda. No one ever gets upset if the meeting, all of a sudden you got 10 or 15 more minutes that you never had before. It's kind of like when I'm teaching to executives or at companies, and if you happen to finish, 15 minutes early, they're not upset in the least. They still think they're getting a lot of value. So it's another one of those funny things. People do it. We do these things without even thinking about it.
I think a lot of people see meetings as accomplishments. At the end of the week, what have I done? I've met with these four people, without any recognition of what specific decisions came out of those meetings and to what extent the decisions, not the meeting themselves, are an accomplishment. Hmm. How can we change that culture within a company?
Have you actually seen a thing like that where people are saying, well, this week I did these five meetings and last week I did these meetings?
I actually have. One company where I was a manager, all the employees were required to submit weekly reports of their accomplishments and plans for the next week. And more often than not, the majority of those accomplishments were simply a list of meetings with different stakeholders.
Hmm. Boy, there's a lot of things to say. That's crazy, isn't it? There's a lot of things to say, but I don't know why in my head I have this vision of how we bring up kids in school and we value and measure and reward effort as much as we do performance. And, there's reasons for that, and I get that at a certain level. But maybe that never ends, and the effort is, well, we had this meeting. I didn't accomplish anything, but I had the meeting, so I've been trying. It's almost the same type of thing.
It reminds me of orchestra practice. In orchestra, I remember being graded not on my performance on a specific piece, but on the number of minutes I spent that week practicing that piece. And that, again, is looking at the focus on time as opposed to what was actually accomplished and the result of that time spent, which I think is similar to the time spent in meetings.
Yeah, it actually does sound similar. And I think what we should say is to anyone and everyone listening to this podcast, quickly check what people are saying in their weekly reviews or monthly reviews or what have you. And if they're recording number of meetings and number of people you spoke to, I think we need to change that and say number of deals closed, number of sales accomplished, number of customers interacted with, number of products produced. Let's start talking about what really counts.
I think that's a change in culture that can come down from the top, but it's also something that every individual employee can do. When you have to report out the findings, the key points from your day, focus on those decisions made. Focus on those accomplishments. Don't focus just on recording the different minutes and how each minute was spent.
You know, we all could be better at it. Leaders have to demand that, have to expect that. And I always say, anyone who's running a team or a leader of any organization, you've got to model the behavior you want. People watch what you're doing. And if you behave in a certain way by saying, you know, I did this and this and this, and there's not a lot of real meat behind it, well, they quickly will figure out that's the way performance is measured here.
What are the top few things you would recommend to people listening in terms of how to run a meeting effectively?
Well, of course, the column gets at this a little bit, but if I were to highlight maybe two things that really jump out to me, the first would be preparation. So much more could be done if people have done their homework. This is true for board meetings. I know you get some of these big board books, but still, that's part of the job. Spending the time to think about what it is you want to say is important. Thinking about what the challenges are and thinking about what your suggestions and maybe even doing some research or talking to people ahead of time. Now, you need to know exactly what the agenda is to be able to do anything like that. And that gets back to kind of managing the process well. But I would say preparation, why aren't we demanding a little bit more? Because you know what? We'll get a lot more out of that meeting. And then the second thing, maybe it's quite connected, is if you're going to have people face-to-face talking, then they should be talking face-to-face and not looking up at the screen at whatever PowerPoint slides or whatever other presentation materials are there. If there's a deck that needs to be looked at, send it to me ahead of time. I will look at it. I will think about it. Maybe that'll be part of my preparation, that I will have thought about it, studied it, and have some questions and notes around that. You don't need to go and present this again. That's not the best use of time. And in a face-to-face meeting, take advantage of this the incredible value of individuals' time, which is that I could challenge you could challenge me, you could have a real debate. I know a lot of people don't like to do that because that's a little scary, and you don't know exactly where it's going to go. But if you want to succeed, if you want to have a successful team and organization, you have to be able to do that. And the problem is not as many teams and organizations are as good at it as they should be. So I would say preparation and then real discussion and get rid of the fillers that dominate meetings would be the two prime things I'd highlight.
Well, on that note, I'd better run to this meeting. I don't want to be late.
That's for sure. Nice talking to you, Ellen.
Thank you.
This has been Sid Wiesen. If you'd like to comment on this podcast, follow Professor Finkelstein on Twitter @SidFinkelstein, #SidWiesen. Thank you for listening.